This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Owen Dolan.
Roger Mann.
Alison Molden.
And I am Stuart Burks. Okay, now Owen, you were born in Palmerston North in...
1928.
Mm-hmm. So, and did you stay in Palmerston North?
No, actually, I was born just a couple of blocks from where we're sitting now in St. John's Avenue. And my father and mother were living in 31, while their own home, number 33, was still being completed. So they were renting the house next door. I was born in that house. Mm-hmm. And my mother, who I don't know very much about that situation, but she died there a week later. I presume it was something to do with childbirth and health, of course. Yeah. So then after that, my father's mother came and took me back to Hawera, and that's where I was cared for by my grandmother, and I had aunts and an uncle in the house living there too. So, and that's where I stayed. My father was a surveyor and civil engineer here in Palmerston North. And, of course, so he had his business. And then after two or three years, he married again. And I've got half-brothers and sisters. But I was kept in Hawera. Always very good relations. There was no tension or anything about this, but they kept me in Hawera. Okay. And so that's where I went then to school. My grandmother, who was, in a sense, almost like surrogate mother at that stage, she died there when I was seven. And then there were the aunts, maiden aunts, whom I thought, because I presumed were my sisters, but of course they were my aunts.
Were they close to you in age?
So? Oh, no, no, they were much older, but I'd been brought up where my grandmother was called Mum, of course. So it was only after a while that it twigged with me that, you know, that they're my aunts. They're not my sisters, but you see, Mum was Mum, and they called each other by their Christian name, so I presume that was the arrangement, but it wasn't.
So did you have much contact with your father?
Yes, he would come up from time to time, of course, and because he was a surveyor, there were always maps. And I suppose one of my addictions is maps. I've got a map of probably every place I've ever been to, and I've been to a lot of places. But I think it started with Dad having maps in the car. But now he was a very good relationship, and he was up and down probably a couple of times a year anyway.
So you were your mother's only child, were you?
Oh, yes. I'd only been married just over 12 months when I was born.
Yeah.
And she died. She was only 28.
That was pretty.
And my mother. She was out of Hawera, a Hawera family also.
Did you have much contact with your mother's family?
Yes, a lot, because they, when I returned then to Hawera, when my mother died, they were Hawera-based also. So I saw quite a lot of them and had been very close. In fact, if first cousins, it was almost like brother-sister, really, because we had a lot to do with each other.
Well, that's good. Mm.
Yeah. So you felt you were part of a large... They were all Catholic, I take it.
And they were all, yes, all Catholic, Irish backgrounded Catholics a couple of generations before.
Was there a strong Catholic community?
Yes, I think it was in Hawera. And, of course, our families, those ones that I've just mentioned, were pretty, you know, very much a part of that. So I suppose that... And then, of course, I went to the Hawera Convent School, as we called it in those days, St. Joseph's. So, you know, all the way through there was a pretty important Catholic part of my life.
Now, there's a standard question then. If you went to a Catholic school, what was he like? Was it strong discipline? Was it an enjoyable experience? Or?
I look back on it very, very happily, and some rather outstanding women nuns, whom I think taught us. One, I wasn't that crazy about. I don't think she was that crazy about me either. But most of them I can look back very happily on.
Yeah.
And then the one in Standard 6, Sister Child, she was a very, very strong person with a deep voice and quite a strong disciplinarian, but a great teacher. She had taught my father at the same school when she was a very young nun. And, of course, 30 years later, she was teaching me. And her phrase sometimes to me would be, "Owen Dolan, you're not the student that your father was." But it was all, it wasn't, she was kind and good and all this strict. Yeah. But, it wasn't any great antipathy, it was anything but.
Yeah. Was there much physical discipline?
She would use the strap, all right, come down on your knuckles if you were holding the pen the wrong way.
The wrong way, your finger grip was
probably
wrong.
There was a way you held your pen, evidently, and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
But that makes a sort of sound a rather, physically, but it wasn't as bad as that.
Was it the same for girls? You were in a mixed classes,
class,
and
yes.
the discipline was the same
I suppose it was. Yes, I don't recall it too accurately. And it wasn't very common, but it happened from time to time that, well, you're writing, something was wrong, and she'd be coming past the desk and, "Owen, Dolan, you do better than that." Boom, boom, boom. Yes, sister.
Yeah. Were there any male teachers?
No, it was all nuns at primary school.
Mm-hmm.
Sisters. They out of Whanganui, their convent was. So primary school was all women religious nuns, yes.
And were the boys given much chance to run around and burn off energy?
Oh, yes. And there was always, we had athletics. We'd go up to Dixon Park for athletics, and then we had rugby team and all that sort of thing. This was, we were outside a lot. And
roughly what was roughly what was the mix of boys to girls ratio, do you think?
I would think it was 50-50, pretty much. Yes, I'm sure. I've got photos of those days from school photos, and just I'd say it was 50-50.
So you weren't sitting in there all on your own?
Oh, no, not by any means. No.
Did a nun coach the rugby team?
No. It would sometimes be the local curate or a parent or something who knew more about rugby.
Okay.
And we'd play sometimes other schools, one of the other local harbour schools and so on. Yes, that was that. And then there was, but one of the big things I always remember was the Dixon Banner Sports. And that was a competition among all the primary schools, I suppose, in South Taranaki, running and jumping and that sort of thing. So we had all that. There was it wasn't a confined thing by any means.
Did you feel like the Catholics, you had a separate school, but were you distinct from the rest of the community?
Well, there was rivalry, of course, between the kids. I mean, we had to go past the Harbour Primary School, the main school, to go home. So, we'd be got at, cattle dogs, and but then, of course, it was not just one-sided. I mean, we were quite capable of, providing our sort of strong words to them, too.
Yes, it was proddy dogs.
Proddy dogs and cattle dogs.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. Yes.
Okay, did that involve fighting or just verbal?
I don't remember it being any fighting.
No.
But certainly verbal from across the road, going home going home from school rather than going to school.
Yeah. Were there friendships across those groups as well?
I think so. Yes, certainly there were, because in the street, I think where I lived, the kids across the road were not Catholics. The Quinn kids, and a lot of Quinns were my relations, but these ones were one of the branches we weren't related to. They were not Catholics. The Foys down there, no. There were probably more that weren't Catholics than Catholic, and I had, friends among them, and I had a birthday, or they had a birthday as kids.
Yeah.
We would be at each other's birthday parties. The families knew each other.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, did you have much connection with Palmerston North then? I know your father went to see you. Did you go the other way?
Not so terribly much the other way, but when I then later on when I went to boarding school, Silver Stream, St. Pat's School, that was when I perhaps saw more of them or came to Palmerston more, because it was during the war and travel was a little bit restricted, but we were allowed at times to come up as far as Palmerston. Mm. And I can remember coming up on the train, there'd be a couple of kids that get off in Levin, Foxton, Shannon, and that sort of thing, and some of us into Palmerston, if that's where we had family or came from.
Okay. Yep.
And so I was up here on those occasions, and so it was a very good relationship. And my father, he was Owen John Dolan, and I was named after him. I always remember, of course, it meant something to me to see his name there on the window of his offices above Goldfinch and Cousins. So, you know, it was all a pretty good relationship altogether. Yep. No tension about it or anything at all.
So you'd be there with your step-siblings?
Yes.
Were you much older than them?
No, Brian, who was the oldest, was a boy. Then there were girls. But Brian was what, perhaps 3 years, might be 4 years younger than me. So that when he was 12, I was 15 or something like that,
we had a
very good relationship.
So what was your impression of Palmerston North, say, compared to Howrah?
Well, I had to get a good impression because my father made sure of that. He was a great Palmerstonian. He was plugged for Palmerston very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he'd come here in the early 20s he was at the First World War. And when he qualified, I think he must have come here perhaps 20, 21, 22, those years. And so he had a lot to, even though he was in private practice, he did quite a bit of city council work. I've been shown old plans that are on the walls of the city council chambers that have got his name on the bottom as the surveyor.
Mm.
Not that he planned, it was a town planner, but he did the survey.
Yes.
And so I heard a lot about Palmerston, and he was a great, the crossroads of the north. I can always remember him saying that. Yes.
Okay.
And also he was a great person to plug for Palmerston North.
Okay. So how else did he plug Palmerston North?
Well, I can't think of any other way, just off the top of my head. But I know that he was involved in some of the, as I say, the surveying, but areas like Bialawa Puni, which is now all set, Hokowit, those areas. I mean, I think he had a fair bit to do with the surveying of the streets and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be what, say, late 20s, 30s, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
When I drive down Featherston Street, I seem to think I can remember Dad saying it was the longest main street in the country, or something, some statistic like that. It mightn't have been Main Street, but and it is, I don't know how long it is. I must measure it sometime, but it's very long. But he used to make a thing of that. How accurate it was or not, I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Okay. Yeah.
The longest straight street in a city or something.
And your impression then of Palmerston North, was it that the baths were important, the swimming baths were important?
I didn't do much of that, but I certainly thought well of Palmerston North.
Okay.
And then, perhaps I'm leaping ahead, but then when I was made a bishop, and that was in the 1990s, I came back and lived in the place where I think I was intended to live all along, but didn't because of the circumstances at the beginning.
Okay. So you had a Catholic education right through?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the way through. That last year was at Howrah High School. But then I went to train for priesthood, which I had been interested in.
Mm.
And that took me to the seminary, which is in those days was in Mosgiel near Dunedin.
Okay. Yeah.
And
Now, can we just go back a bit?
Sure.
Yeah, because there was something about you said that you had 1 year in Howrah High School, and you mentioned something before we started recording about, was it rheumatic fever?
Well, oh yes, I see. Well, when I was at Silver Stream, and I'm talking about the early 40s, 43, 44, there was an epidemic that I think went, I don't know how far it went, but Wellington and Hutt Valley anyway, and it seemed to be teenagers that were affected by it, and it was a form of scarlet fever. It was said, the place, of course, was full of American servicemen in those days, the Wellington and the Hutt Valley, and especially just down the road from the college. Silver Stream Hospital was built by them, and it was just down the road. And there were often lots of servicemen at our place, because before they had chaplains and so on, they would come to the college for chapel and mass and those sorts of things. But they say that it was an epidemic. There were things that the Americans picked up in the, or brought back from the Pacific. I don't know how accurate that is. I can remember at Silver Stream looking out the study window, and every second day there in that latter part, there seemed to be an ambulance at our place taking some kid off to this hospital. Then it was my turn, and I was one of them. I think at one stage there were about 30 or 40 of us from Silver Stream. And the hospital was an emergency fever hospital under the main grandstand of the Trentham Racecourse.
Okay. So what were the symptoms like? Was it very serious?
I think feverish and sore throats. I think, as I recall.
Was it potentially fatal, or...?
I don't know whether it was fatal, but it did have some serious complications for some. One was a kidney thing, evidently, and the other one was this heart thing. And there were several of us got that, including myself.
Heart thing.
An inflammation of the lining of the heart, I think they described it as. And that meant that when you... What's the word? When you're out of... You know, it's safe to move you from being in quarantine in one
when
thing.
When you're no longer contagious.
Yes, contagious.
Yeah.
So then I went in an ambulance to Wellington Hospital because of this condition, and was there for another almost 2 months, I think. And there were one or two others.
Did they continue with the race meetings while you...
Yes, I don't... That's it. I wouldn't have any idea. I wouldn't know. I was there, let's say it was October, November. Races would be...
Because it was during the war years, and I wonder whether they, in fact, did continue with...
That's the point, yes. Races. It was 1943 I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right in the middle, really, wasn't it?
Now, you said also that these were Americans who'd come back from the Pacific. I know that Americans came here as training before going out. They also came back for rest and recuperation?
Yes, I'm sure. Well, and that's why, for instance, they built what became known as the Silver Stream Hospital. Big, big place, which I think may still be not used as a hospital, of course, now, but the buildings, I think, are still there on top of the hill at Silver Stream, and it was just about a kilometre down the road from the college.
Oh, so those were troops who had been wounded in combat?
I think so. Yes, it was a hospital anyway, I don't know what sort of...
Yeah. Did you have much contact with the Americans?
Not very much, but until, as I say, they got settled and had their own chaplains and so on, and a lot of them, I presume, were Catholic, they would be up at the college because they were... for our chapel on Sundays. We were introduced, of course, at the same time to Lucky Strike and Marlborough. And,
so you're all smoking,
like well, yes, this was...
At what age? At what age?
14, 15. This was completely forbidden, of course. So you'd get a smack up from the Master of Discipline if you were caught smoking. One of the first things we did at Silver Stream when I arrived in 42 was build trenches and all over the front lawn in front of the college, and we had blackout drills and all that sort of thing. But they were useful for smokers, of course. Those things, they had their uses.
Were you given any training with rifles?
Well, we used to have, I think, as all secondary schools did.
Cadets.
We had cadets in those days, and I don't think we ever had any. I don't recall any training with rifles, but we certainly did we ever carry a gun? I can't remember, but we said, this was all I can remember about it, it was marching, marching, marching.
Yeah.
You so would have experienced those things, would you too?
Yes. Yes.
No, we had live fire stuff.
I see.
What was your impression then of the Americans?
They were all friendly, very friendly. I mean, as I say, they passed out cigarettes and cans of, as they call them, of candy. You know, tins of boiled sweets and things. Right. Sort of thing.
Yeah.
I can remember being in the infirmary, and one of them, who was a chaplain, but this didn't last very long, that phase. I mean, they got organised down there, but the chaplains, of course, were cobbery with the priests at Silverstream also, and they would be up. And being in the... I can remember one of those American chaplains coming and talking to us through the window of the infirmary, and I think, you know, was leading up to whatever, you know, going to the hospital, and bringing us two lovely sets of... a game, you know.
What, chess pieces? Or drafts?
Yeah, not chess, but the...
Draft?
No?
Checkers.
Yes. You know, and very fine. They weren't just rubbishy cardboard things.
Yeah.
They were, you know, pretty upmarket sort of...
Gosh.
Yes, for us kids to play with, boys to play with in the infirmary. So, no, my impression of them was... didn't have an awful lot to do with them, but they were friendly and generous and, you know, greet you and all the rest of it.
Did you see a cultural difference? Or were they sort of exotic? Because New Zealand was sort of fairly...
I think we thought they were rather special, because anything from the States was to kids in those days. I mean, we had Hollywood movies, that was the States, that sort of thing. So they were from that place.
So they
would have all been, you know, we would have thought of them as being rather special.
But apart from all that, I think we have an awful lot to thank them for what they did in the Pacific.
Oh, absolutely. They prevented them, the Japanese, from getting as far as our place. Blackout, for instance, at night time when we would all go up to your dormitory, you had to stand in the passage of the dormitory until the priest who looked after that dormitory, you know, went round and checked all the blackout blinds before we were allowed to turn the lights on and go into the dormitories, sort of thing.
Okay, yeah. So did the war have much impact on you at the time? Was it something you were very conscious of?
No, I had an uncle who went overseas, and he was at Trentham, which was just up the road. And he came when he was there in that last period, I think, before he went overseas. You know, he came down to see me two or three times. And as I say, we would go up to Trentham on our march. But otherwise, I don't think... I'll tell you another thing that happened too. We used to have, you know, chapel every morning. And I can remember the rector, Father Leo Evatt, coming in. We'd all be in the chapel. And he would come in looking very knitted brow and very down. And it was to announce that we've just had news of the death of whoever it was. Oh. And it was somebody who'd been a kid at the school just 3 or 4 years before, anyway.
Yeah.
And was killed in you know, El Alamein or something like that.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I remember that very clearly. We thought, Leo would come in and you could tell. And he would make that announcement, and he did it all too frequently.
So how did you react? How did the boys react?
I don't know. None of us in my age group, anyway, would have known the boys. Let me change that a bit. I can think of a couple of cases where the younger brother of that boy who'd just been killed was at Silverstream, perhaps not in the same class, but he'd be a senior boy, you know, at the college. O'Fagan, I remember once there was an O'Fagan. He'd been a prefect in the mid or late 30s or something, and he was an airman, and he was killed, you know, in a Spitfire or something like that. And Bill O'Fagan, his brother, was a prefect still. That's one that comes to mind, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty sad, isn't it? Pretty unnecessary.
Okay. So was it at that stage that you decided you wanted to become a priest?
Yeah, I think so, probably, because we had... See, the staff were all priests, Maoist priests, and some of them were great guys, and I think there were a lot of guys who went to either to the Maoist seminary itself, which was in Green Meadows, or the Diocesan seminary, which was in... That's for priests and parishes. Yeah. The other was mainly for colleges, teaching.
Did you feel you were pressured into doing
that? No, not in the least. No, certainly not. I don't think anybody was. But I think that some of those priests, you know, they were out there sort of sports teams and all the rest of it, and there were some great characters among them. I can remember some of them with great clarity and very, very positively, and models, you know, examples for you in the way they taught or something like that. They were great.
And they were all highly educated?
Oh, yes, I think so. Well, we've done 7 years of philosophy and theology, which is a tertiary level stuff. Hmm. But then a lot of those ones, especially the teachers at Silverstein, would have been, afterwards, would have been doing degrees at Victoria or whatever. And there were some great models, and I think that's what was the attraction, probably to a degree, that helped people to want to be like that.
Okay. Now, also, you went from a primary school that was all women teachers to, was it a boys-only school with all male teachers?
Yes.
How was that something that...
Don't know. Just trying to... Hadn't thought that one through. But I just think of it, but it was. It was all that male. It was also the difference between living at home with a couple of adults and perhaps one or two friends around, and then being in a community of 200 kids, all boys. Hmm. That was, you know, boarding school too, away from home. Food we thought was lousy.
And always is at boarding school.
Yes, at boarding school. It could never be worse.
They could cook you up gourmet meals and they would never be good enough.
Yes, it would have been right. So we had, you know, there was a lot of grouching about that. It was wartime, after all, too.
Yeah.
And the bread was, you know, great big thick hunks of what we call Denhard's doorsteps. Denhard's was the bread. And we had a pudding that you'd have three times a week, which was called Sinker. It was allegedly some sort of steamed or boiled pudding, but it was greasy and awful, and they cooked it in big, you know, the jam came in big round tins and was cooked in those and then shaken out and cut in half. And so once, you know, and somebody at your table would have to, the bell would go and you had to go up to the slide to get your dessert. And you'd see kids coming back and it'd be Sinker again. And so they'd be coming back, just getting onto the table, you know, this sort of thing. And the priest who was in charge of the dining room would try to get a semblance of order, and probably would eventually, but it must have been damn hard work for him. You know,
okay.
We weren't kind to some of them at all. Yeah. There were some of them, one or two of them were not strong personalities. They weren't classroom teachers really at all. Mm. And, of course, we took advantage of that very much.
Straight away.
But some of them, you know, they really had excellent control. Yeah. And some of them were severe, but a lot of them, most of them were pretty good.
Okay. And you have fond memories of that time?
I have very fond memories of it. Very fond memories of those 4 years. No, didn't always feel that, perhaps, while it was going on. I can remember in the sixth form coming back, all of us in the bus from Wellington Station or something, and it was just at the end of the war in 45, and of course the Allies had been able to get into concentration camps, and we'd just been hearing about Belsen, and, you know, as we drove in the driveway, you know, some kid in the back of the bus saying, oh, here we are, back in Belsen, you know, that sort of thing, but that's...
Yeah, it's a natural reaction.
Isn't it?
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.org. www.govt.nz.
Support this programme and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.